All right, guys, you are Locked On Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am joined by none other than Locked On Patriots host, Mark Schofield. We're going to be breaking down this year's quarterback class in this 2018 draft class heading into the combine.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon fan sites on the internet, and, of course, the host of this Locked On Falcons podcast. You can find me on Twitter, at FalcFans, tweeting up a storm with the hot takes. The draft takes are coming soon. But I am joined by Mark Schofield, the host of Locked On Patriots podcast, also a contributor to Inside the Pylon, does a lot of great stuff there, does a lot of work with the quarterbacks. We had Mark on last year talking about last year's quarterback class, and this was probably the first of multiple appearances for Mark this offseason talking about this year's quarterback class. So welcome back to the show, Mark.
Aaron, my friend, always great to be on with you. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm glad that the combine is here. I'm eager. I took off work tomorrow so I can watch the offensive lineman work out.
There you go.
And I also took off Monday so I can watch the DBs work out as well. So
those are going to be fun days. We had some bench numbers today too, so we're getting rolling.
Yeah. I was eagerly looking around at the trying to get these fullback weigh-ins right. on these guys. That's, you know, that's how much of a sickness I have trying to sickness, find out. Man. You know, how big is Donnie Ernsberger? Where is this guy's right. arm length and whatnot? So, yeah, that's what I wound up doing today after I got off work. So, let's jump right into it. For those of you guys listening to this show, we're going to have Mark back on a little bit later, probably in April when we get closer to draft and we can really do a deep dive on this year's draft class. This year, this episode is going to be a little bit more of an overview, sort of how these guys, an overview of the class, how these guys may relate in the combine and what we may see this weekend. But let's start things off, Mark. Let's talk about Lamar Jackson. I know you wrote a piece on Inside the Pylon, I think last week, that was sort of a rebuttal to all the talk going on about Lamar Jackson, with sort of Bill Polian coming out and being pretty vehemently over the last couple of several months, really since like October, talking about Lamar Jackson should move to wide receiver. And then, you, of course, you get the reaction to the reaction. So I'm curious sort of where's your stance on that whole controversy?
Well, you know, Aaron, you know, you mentioned the piece, and I can dive into that in a second, but I actually think that Benjamin Solak over at NDT Scouting had the best sort of approach to it, because he did a piece on Lamar's mechanics, which came out this week, which is really well done. And he just says at the outset that Lamar Jackson is a quarterback, and that's all I'm going to say on that, and just moves on, because I think that's what we all really need to do. Now, you know, to dive into the question a little bit deeper, what I did in the piece that I wrote was took some of the arguments that people have been making about Lamar Jackson and kind of dove into those and did my best to rebut them. And at the outset, I think what we need to do is we've sort of allowed, in some sense, Lamar's athletic ability and his, I'd say, almost elite ability as a ball carrier with the football in his hands in space to become sort of a negative when it comes to him and his ability to transition to playing quarterback in the NFL. And I think we really need to flip that script back a bit, because what he can do as an athlete is almost the ultimate equalizer in terms of him playing the quarterback position. Because, you know, I broke down some plays where he gets blitzed, there's free rushers, and he can just turn what should be a sack and would be a sack for almost any other quarterback in this class into a first down run, because he has that natural athletic ability. People sometimes knock him for his release, saying it's just a wrist flick, and that isn't good because it, you know, sometimes hurts his accuracy. And we'll talk about accuracy in a second, but I think the wrist flick is again an equalizer, because he can get the ball out quicker than most people in this class. Other guys like Sam Darnold, for example, have that long windup, whereas, you know, Lamar can reset his feet, reset himself in the pocket, and get the ball out quicker than most. And so I think we need to flip the script there. Polian, for example, talks about his size and his frame. He said he was too short to play quarterback. Well, as we saw today at the measurements, he's 6'2", and 6'2", most people look at as, you know, the threshold. That's what Hugh Jackson looks at. That's what we talked about with Hugh Jackson last year. I'm fine with anybody being over 6 feet. I don't think he's too short to play the position. As far as his frame and his size, will he need to perhaps pick his spots when he runs as a NFL quarterback? Will he need to learn to get down? Sure, but you could have said that, and I did say that about Carson Wentz. You know, and Wentz got hurt running the football. And nobody said that Wentz was too small and didn't have the frame to play the position in the NFL. And so I think that's sort of a faulty argument. This idea that you need to, you know, move him to wide receiver because you need to get him the ball in space. Well, let's just rely on his God-given ability to get the ball in space as a quarterback. It just seems like that's a flawed argument, because then you're relying on people to get him the football and you're taking it out of his hands to begin every single play. And so that doesn't make sense to me. And finally, the last point that I'll touch on, I think we're going to dive into this a little bit more later, but one of the arguments that was also made by Polian and others was he was running a simplified offense. And I think if people took the time to go through Bobby Petrino's playbook, they'd realize that offense is anything but simplified. It was probably one of the tougher offenses that some of these quarterbacks in this class were running. And when I broke down his interceptions in the regular season for Inside the Pylon, it's a YouTube video out, I had Petrino's playbook in front of me, and I take you through the progression reads, the conversions, the option routes, the reads that he had to make on each and every single one of these plays. And it's a pretty complex offense. Where at times, maybe 2 years ago when he won the Heisman, that he was more of, say, of a tuck it and go guy and go through reads. Yeah, but I think he really sort of advanced and developed as a pocket quarterback this past season. And there are other arguments like the run first stuff, which I dismiss, and things like that. The, you know, the inaccuracy tag that he's been hit with. Does he need to clean up mechanics a little bit? Sure, he has a narrow throwing base. Like he could stand to work on that. But he's a quarterback, and for my money, he could be a very good one early in his career in the NFL.
Yeah, definitely recommend for people to go check out Inside the Pylon video, some of the videos that Mark put out there on this quarterback class. Definitely, if you're not subscribed to their YouTube channel, definitely want to check that out, because they do put out a lot of great stuff and you'll learn a lot. It's interesting to me with Lamar Jackson in particular, and just going back, you know, basically 5 years ago, where the type of quarterback that Lamar Jackson was like the in vogue quarterback, where you had people like Ron Jaworski and Greg Cosell, you know, talking about Colin Kaepernick as the next mm-hmm. big great quarterback. You had Robert Griffin coming into the league and lighting the you know, having one of the better rookie seasons that we've really seen of all time in that Kyle Shanahan offense in Washington, where you had Michael Vick in his sort of second run in Philadelphia working in Andy Reid's offense and really being, you know, this high-end dangerous quarterback. And it seems like over the last 5 years, and maybe it's partially owed to, you know, Vic getting old and Kaepernick not really sort of living up to those expectations and Griffin getting hurt and then, you know, now being out of the league a couple of years later, that all of a sudden it seems like the pendulum has swung too far back in the other direction. And now people are looking at, you know, Lamar Jackson and all his faults, or if you want to term them that, as far as you're talking about with the notion that he's a run-first quarterback and this dynamic athlete with his legs more so than his arm, and sort of seeing like, well, that doesn't work. That can't work in the NFL because it hasn't worked so far. And, you know, I look at it where I would love to be the coach that would be challenged to try to make that work, because – in a lot of ways, Lamar Jackson has things that those other three guys didn't have. And in particular, like you look at a guy like Vic, where he didn't necessarily live up to his potential in Atlanta. But, you know, since Vic came into the league, teams, other teams that have had comparable quarterbacks, you know, Michael Vick is somewhat incomparable in a lot of ways. But teams have had similar types of quarterbacks that are these big time athletes have done a better job developing those guys because they've learned the lessons from the mistakes that the Falcons made during Vic's time in Atlanta. And it just seems like you can learn from the mistakes of Kaepernick or from Griffin if you get Lamar Jackson, and he can be the guy that lives up to that billing that these other guys may or may not have done. And it seems like too often we see this reactionary sort of perspective from the NFL when it comes to these Lamar Jackson type of quarterbacks. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Aaron, I think that's a very good point. And I think reactionary is a good word for it, because I think people saw what happened with RG3 and they assumed that it was his play style. It was the offense that he was asked to run. It was the fact that he was an athlete who did like to use his legs, and they see how that sort of ended in Washington. And they just assume that it's going to be the same next time they try to, you know, draft a quarterback that has that athletic ability and try to make him work in the NFL, because there's this concern that because of that play style, because of the reliance on his legs at times, that he's going to end up getting hurt. And what that glosses over is the fact that a lot of RG3 sort of injuries wasn't really due to, you know, his play style. Now, he had the initial hit from Haloti Ngata, which happened in the pocket, that loosened that knee. And then he was trying to make a cut on a field surface, which was horrible, during a playoff game that nobody should have been playing on to begin with. And more than anything, that's what really set RG3 back. But that's, again, an oversimplification of some of these athletic quarterbacks trying to, you know, make it seem like Lamar Jackson is something that he's not. And that really sort of undersells Jackson's ability to make plays from the pocket and his development as a pocket quarterback. And I'd say that him coming out, he's an advanced passer when you kind of juxtapose him with where RG3 is, or where he was when he was coming out of Baylor. So that's one part of it. And the other thing is, you know, it is interesting the way you sort of frame this, because you're seeing this sense that, you know, evaluators and, you know, maybe people inside the draft media world are moving away from those types of quarterbacks because they just feel that, you know, for whatever reason, Kaepernick hasn't worked out. You know, RG3 didn't work out. He got hurt. You know, maybe these guys can't make it work. But yet the offenses themselves are trending in a direction that's very sort of friendly to quarterbacks coming out with a skill set like Lamar Jackson. And let's look no further than the past Super Bowl. I mean, look at the offense that the Eagles were running under Nick Foles. I mean, that's an offense that Lamar Jackson could come in and run right away. And so you look at what McVay's doing out in LA with Jared Goff, and again, similar sort of spread type concepts, because more and more of these younger coaches are coming into the head coaching ranks, having coached these types of concepts. And they're seeing that these are working, and they're seeing that more and more quarterbacks are coming through high school, 7-on-7, college, haven't run these offenses themselves, and they're finally coming to the point where they're making the realization that we can't just force these guys into our offensive structures. It's not going to work. If we're going to invest in a first-round quarterback, let's build an offense tailored to his skill set. And so I think that what might work in Lamar Jackson's favor is that this sort of paradigm shift in offensive schematics is finally upon us. Some of us have been calling for it for years. Stop, you know, forcing these square pegs into round holes. Maybe it's finally happened. And Jackson might be coming out at almost the ideal time where he's going to step into a situation, perhaps with a coach in an environment that says, let's work with what this guy has and not try to force him into something he's not.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that with, you know, this past year's Super Bowl, you could imagine Lamar Jackson fitting in Philadelphia's offense. You could imagine him fitting in Atlanta with Kyle Shanahan's offense. You could imagine him doing some of the things that Cam Newton was able to do. You could imagine him doing some of the things that Russell Wilson was. So it seems like this notion that the type of quarterback that Lamar Jackson is can't achieve at a high level, when you look at the last couple of Super Bowls, it seems like similar types of quarterbacks, or at least offenses that like and prefer these types of quarterbacks that can use their legs and really, you know, disadvantage defenses. You know, I always think about Rex Ryan. I think he famously said, like, you know, the type of quarterback, these mobile quarterbacks, I'd much rather face a Tom Brady than a Colin Kaepernick type of guy, just because it's so much harder to try to defend the mobility that these guys have. So, you know, it's odd to me that so many evaluators sort of see it as a negative, and when I think a lot of NFL coaches see it as a positive. And, you know, it'll be interesting to sort of see if that's reflected in Jackson's draft status when we finally get to April later this year.
Yeah, I hope so, because, you know, to me, I look at some teams in this draft, you know, I look at, say, even the Jets at 6. I think when you look at what they were running last year under John Morton and what I think they'll be running this year under Bates, although he's more of a West Coast Gruden Shanahan tree, again, I still think that would be a good fit for Jackson. I look at what the Bills have at 21 and 22. They've got two picks of Jackson falls to them. I think that would be a good fit. You know, and then if he falls to a team like New England at 31, and I'm not just saying this as the host of Locked On Patriots or a Patriots fan. I'm saying this as a fan of Lamar Jackson, a guy that wants to see him succeed. Again, imagine him having a chance to, you know, sit and learn for a year or two. He's not a guy I think needs to sit. But if he falls to a situation like that, they could start to build the offense of the future around him. So, you know, look, Jackson's going to be – it's going to be fascinating to see where he goes. You know, he's one of these guys when we talk about these will versus should debates. Will a guy go in the first versus should he go in the first? He's the guy that I think maybe he doesn't go in the first, but I still believe that he really should.
And on that note, I do want to ask you about sort of this draft class as a whole, particularly compared to last year. And I think we had you on last year and you were talking about, you know, this 2018 class, you know, 10 months ago, and talking about how this notion that, oh, next year's draft class is going to be better than this current draft class, so you can wait on a quarterback and wait till next year. So I guess now that next year is finally here, do you feel like this year's draft class is one that was worthy of waiting for? Or I know that's kind of a loaded question, but right. Is this draft class, you know, as good as advertised with, you know, the big five or maybe even the big six if you're a Mason Rudolph fan?
Right. And it's a fascinating question, Aaron, because, you know, I was one of the people last year that was saying, look, there are some really good quarterbacks in this class. And I think, you know, the three at the top, Mahomes, Trubisky, and Watson, I think those three have the potential to be special. And, you know, I'm saying this as somebody that was on Watson Hill from day one. I have a Watson jersey in hand in the closet now. I mean, this is my youngest son here. And I still think that those three guys are going to be special. But the issue with the 2017 class was it really sort of dropped off. You know, after Kaiser, I'd say, you know, you then get into Peterman and Webb, and there's not really a lot there. And so I think the depth of this 2018 class, I think, is a better, you know, it's a deeper group, I think, because there are going to be guys that are going to be taken on, you know, day two of this draft that I think are going to be starters in this league for a while. There are some guys in day three that could be some guys that in the right spot could develop as well. And while I don't think this class measured up to the expectations that were put upon it at this time last year, when everybody was saying, oh, wait till next year, Donald's going to be great, Allen's going to be great, you know, Rosen's going to be great, these guys are going to be surefire first rounders, I still think because of the depth to it and the fact that of the guys at the big five, you might get three or four that could really hit, you know, I'd give the slight edge to this class. But again, you're talking about a deep group here against really three guys, and it's still, you know, pretty close in my mind. So I'm still really high on those three guys from last year. I think they're going to be special. And a couple of these guys, as we know, it always happens, won't pan out the way we hope.
So we're talking draft, we're talking combine, but you know who else is talking draft and combine? That's hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema of the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. Both guys will be on hand at this year's Scouting Combine, so you could definitely want to subscribe to that podcast to get the inside scoop on everything going on in Indianapolis. Locked On NFL Draft, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Find it wherever podcasts can be found, now including Spotify. So, Mark, let's talk about this year's combine. And, you know, we're not going to really talk about, oh, you know, Sam Darnold elected not to throw that. That's all nonsense. We make a big deal about that for no reason, just because it's fun. Right. But, yeah. You know, you don't have the opportunity necessarily to put these guys on the board like NFL teams will when they conduct these 15-minute interviews with a lot of these guys. But having watched the film and sort of getting an understanding of this guy's decision-making, his ability to go through progressions and sort of this understanding of his offense in particular, which of these guys would you, you know, say bet would be able to thrive in those situations where these teams put them on the board and ask them these questions and ask them to break certain things down? And the guys that at least on tape look like they're going to be the guys that have it from the neck up, as they say.
Yeah. And to me, there are four guys that I think from, you know, watching their tape, going through sort of what they've been asked to do from a playbook perspective, getting a chance to talk to them on occasion, because, you know, you did get that chance down at Mobile. You know, the guys that stand out to me first, Josh Rosen, you know, I think from an on-the-field perspective, he's probably the cleanest quarterback prospect in this group. I love what he does from a decision-making standpoint. Yeah, he threw some interceptions, but a lot of those were route miscommunications, by his receivers, I believe, on conversion routes and option routes and things like that. So I like Rosen from a mental standpoint. I like Baker Mayfield from a mental standpoint. People knock, you know, the Big 12 offenses, the Big 12 defenses, but from a process and speed standpoint, from the ability to read and react to what a defense showed him pre-snap and then changed post-snap, rotated post-snap, whatever you want to call it, I liked what Baker Mayfield could do from a mental standpoint. If we're talking about a guy on a whiteboard, and I think, you know, and I wrote this a couple of weeks ago, the most important place in all of Indianapolis for Lamar Jackson is on that whiteboard, because I think he will get a chance to show NFL decision makers the stuff we were just talking about. Look, here are the concept I was running. Here are the different progression reads that I had to make based on the coverage. Here are the different conversions on each of these routes based on the coverage. This is what I was asked to do in my offense. Now you tell me, sir, is this or is this not an NFL offense? Because that's what he was running. And so I have a lot of faith in Lamar in those sort of whiteboard sessions. And I think he's going to have the chance to show these guys that, look, I was running an NFL offense. I don't care what Bill Polian or anybody else has to say. This is what I was doing. This is what teams are running. And to kind of put a bow on that point, Bobby Petrino's offense is rooted in Ernst Perkins' concepts. That's the offense that the Patriots are running. You know, and so this idea that he's not running an NFL offense, I think is kind of misguided when you look at the fact that it's rooted in an NFL offensive structure. So Lamar, I think, will be good in that situation. And finally, Kyle Lauletta, the kid from Richmond, you know, multiple year starter at Richmond. I know it's an FCS school, but he was playing for four different offensive coordinators. He had the chance, if he wanted to either transfer or maybe even leave a year early when he learned that he was going to get a fourth offensive coordinator as a senior, but he stuck around. He shows really good decision-making as well. Shows pretty good process and speed. I was concerned, you know, from an arm talent perspective, was he going to be able to play fast enough? But I think he can. He showed it down in Mobile. He showed it, you know, real good understanding of passing concepts down in Mobile as well. And so he's a guy in that sort of next tier of quarterbacks, I think, that from a mental standpoint might, you know, sort of give himself an edge over some of the other guys in this class.
Now, I think it's interesting that you didn't mention Sam Darnold or Josh Allen in that as your answer to that question. And it's interesting because those two guys, according to some folks, are the two guys that some people believe are the best two bets to go number one overall to the Cleveland Browns or whoever winds up selecting that pick. I'm sort of curious why you're not as keen maybe on either of those two guys' mental processing and all that type of stuff.
Right. Well, with Darnold, you get to see some of it at times. Darnold is more in that mold of a gunslinger in that – you know, there are things that he can do sort of outside the pocket, off structure, that are pretty unique in this class. I think that he has a nice sort of the ability to make anticipation throws as well as the ability to sort of stay aggressive are things that stand out with him. You know, I think from a mental standpoint, he's okay. Like, I'm not really worried about it, but those guys sort of stand out to me more, the guys that I talked about. Now, with Allen, it's a different story. With Allen, I really sort of question, you know, outside of his ability to throw the football through a brick wall, there are aspects of Allen as a quarterback which I have yet to see. You know, and when I was studying him last summer, you know, I called him Nuke LaLouche from Bull Durham because he's got the $10 million arm, but he has to learn everything else that goes into playing the quarterback position, whether it's touch, time, and anticipation, feel, all those other things. And I was hoping to see that from him this year on tape, and I didn't see it develop anywhere close to what I would have liked. And I just wanted to see a little bit of it. And then I thought, well, maybe, you know, we go down to Mobile and we'll see him at the Senior Bowl. And even then, Aaron, like when he was asked to throw just a corner route in one-on-ones where he'd have to use a little bit of touch, it's a joyride. It's a roller coaster type of event. So I'm still not sure that the mental standpoint and all the other stuff that goes into playing the position is developed yet. You're banking on development with him, and we've often seen at the NFL that it doesn't pan out the way you would hope, that for whatever reason, you draft a guy early, you need to develop him, and it just doesn't pan out. And, you know, I think he has the raw talent, obviously, to be great. He makes splash throws that nobody else can make. His arm talent is elite, and he's going to look great throwing at the combine. But it just – my hesitation with him is that – all the other stuff, you know, the cliched line that he's a thrower and not a passer, it really is applicable here because there's so much more that goes into playing the position, just throwing the ball as hard as you can. And from a mental standpoint, his plan B on most plays is I will just break the pocket, I will roll to my right, and I will throw it long and hard. And that's his plan B. And that could work at times. He won a game against Hawaii doing that. But then throughout the rest of the game, there were misses on simple swing routes, plays where he stared down routes and just thought, my arm is going to get me out of this situation. And he led defenders to the ball and should have thrown pick sixes. Anytime he has to react to a rotational coverage, he had a bad interception against Boise State doing that. And so I just, you know, I'm just not there with Allen. Again, will versus should. I know he's going to go early in the draft. I wouldn't do it.
Well, Mark, people can check you out on Locked On Patriots. You are the host there, giving the daily scoop, not only on the New England Patriots, but also doing work on this year's draft class. As you can tell, he does his homework. So you guys definitely want to check out Locked On Patriots, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Mark, I want to wrap us up by talking about, you mentioned Kyle Laletta, and I've been hearing a lot of buzz about Laletta since the Senior Bowl, and I have this feeling that because these teams are going to miss out on some of these high-end quarterbacks at the top of the draft, someone's going to pull the trigger on the guy like Laletta somewhere at some point in day two, whether that's the second round or is this third round. I know he's a guy that you've been talking about as sort of a Jimmy Garoppolo replacement possibly in New England. But I am curious maybe if there's some other guys out there that maybe some of these quote-unquote sleepers, maybe these mid-round, late-round guys that I should myself check out just because you look at them and you're like, hey, this guy, if he got in that Kyle Shanahan type of offense that the Falcons are trying to run under Steve Sarkisian, that this guy could really fit in that offense, because I know there's a lot of Falcon fans out there that think the Falcons should be, you know, moving on from the older Matt Schaub and really trying to develop a long-term backup for Matt Ryan that can sort of take the reins for Matt Ryan, you know, 4 or 5 years from now or whenever that's the case. And, you know, basically I'm asking you, is there a TJ Yates out there for me that I maybe should check out before this draft process goes?
Yeah, definitely. I think there are a couple of, you know, guys in that sort of day three category that really intrigue me and I think would be good fits. I'll start with Mike White from Western Kentucky. I think he's fairly scheme diverse, actually. You know, he's somebody that I think could run sort of, you know, West Coast boot stuff, things like that, but also has the arm talent and the velocity to get more downfield as well. And, you know, I know teams like Atlanta, like New England as well, look to get vertical at times. I think White could do that. One question I had on him was a process and speed question coming into this year, but I think he sort of showed some development there. He's somebody that flashed at times down in Mobile as well, so he's a name to keep in mind. Two other guys that are going to be, you know, getting some attention, very raw, I think, are Riley Ferguson from Memphis, Chase Litton from Marshall. Those are two guys that are pretty raw. You know, Ferguson stepped in after Paxton Lynch, so he's been running more of a spread type offense, but he's an athletic kid. He can do some stuff where he's throwing on the move. He's got the arm talent where he can push the ball downfield. Litton's the kid from Marshall who I was surprised came out. I thought if he stayed for his senior year at Marshall that he would push himself into contention for maybe a day two, even late day one type of pick. Incredibly raw, but incredible arm talent. He's sort of like Josh Allen light, I think. And if you're somebody that likes Josh Allen, thinks you can develop him, he's an like the sort of an athletic kid that can throw well on the move, can push the ball downfield at times, but you want to get him at, say, a fifth round value, then keep an eye on Chase Litton. You know, and another name that has really been under the radar, Aaron, but I think we'll hear a little bit more coming into and out of the combine, is Logan Woodside from Toledo, an undersized kid. I haven't seen his measurements come in. I was a, you know, I know hand-sized Twitter gets mocked when it happens, but he was a guy that when I saw him play in the rain against Central Michigan, it looked like he couldn't grip the ball. So I haven't seen his hand size come in, so I'm curious about that. Again, undersized, very experienced, love his footwork in the pocket, love the way he moves and slides around. He has that sort of proverbial eye in the back of your helmet where he can feel that backside pressure and step away from it. Not really somebody that's going to push the ball downfield as much, doesn't have an overpowering arm, But if you're drafting somebody to sort of develop and see what they become in a couple of years down the road, you know, Logan Woodside, somebody that would probably be there, you know, in the fifth or sixth round, and you could address other positions and then see what you get in him over the next couple of years. But yeah, those are some names that I think in that day three developmental type range where you're looking at somebody that can maybe be a QB2 improvement, and maybe you see what happens with them down the road. Those are some names I keep in mind.
Okay. I'll definitely check them out. I saw White watching the Senior Bowl, the game, and he made some impressive throws, and I was like, okay.
I mean, he's got some arm talent to him. And, you know, a game that I really liked from him was his last regular season game against Middle Tennessee State, because they were running a lot of 3-3-5 stuff up front, a lot of exotic blitz and stunt looks where he really had to react on the fly. And like I said, that was a concern that I had coming him into the season, sort of his processing speed, his ability to sort of decipher stuff up front. He really had a good game in that game. So, yeah, I think he's somebody that I saw some development in, you know, and definitely somebody that – maybe plays himself into that sort of second tier if he has, you know, a good pro day, good combine. But yeah, he's a guy to definitely keep an eye on.
All right, Mark, man, I appreciate it coming on, talking quarterbacks with me. We will definitely be talking more with these quarterbacks. We're all sitting here waiting for free agency to come around so we can see this Kirk Cousins domino fall and sort of how that affects the draft and who's looking for quarterbacks and whatnot, as well as some of the other guys out there. Definitely want to have you back on to go a little bit deeper in some of these quarterback prospects. Maybe we can start talking more like specific fits for the teams and whatnot based off of their strengths and weaknesses as we get closer to the draft. But I'll give you the floor here to go ahead, plug your Twitter, plug what you got coming on Locked On Patriots, anything you're contributing on Inside the Pylon as well.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Aaron. Always a pleasure to be with you, and happy to come on anytime and talk QBs. Again, you can follow me on Twitter at Mark Schofield, over the work over at Inside the Pylon, where I'm doing mostly quarterback stuff. We're getting ready for our draft guide, our second draft guide, which will be coming out April 1st. Obviously, Locked On Pats. And to be honest, before we hopped on, Aaron, I was watching 2019 quarterbacks. I'm already moving on, man, because it never stops. I've done my work on these guys. Happy to talk about them, of course, but we're already getting baselines on guys like, you know, Ryan Finley and Clayton Thorson and Will Greer, and the QB grind never ends, my friend.
All right, well, Mark, we're going to have to start a GoFundMe so we can raise some funds so you can get some therapy, my friend.
I know. That's exactly what I need, Aaron. I need somebody to talk to about the issues that I have to clearly work through.
All right, man. I appreciate it, and I look forward to talking with you later this offseason.
All right, buddy. Pleasure talking with you as always, Aaron.
All right, man. Good night.
See you.
All right, guys. There you have it. Mark Schofield, the quarterback guru. Always interesting stuff. Like, you know, could have gone, you know, another 45 minutes talking with these quarterbacks, but we'll save it till April. We'll get there. We'll definitely get there. But, you know, we got to get these Josh Allen takes. Plus, I need this time to brush up on these guys. I've seen every single one of them, but not certainly enough to hold my own in a conversation, in a discussion with Mark. So once we get to April, hopefully I will have seen a lot more of Darnold and Allen and Mayfield and Jackson and Rosen as well. I've seen all of them to a certain extent, but you know, Mason Rudolph, I've seen him light up Pittsburgh, my alma mater, 2 years in a row. So I've certainly seen way too much of Mason Rudolph than I want to see in my lifetime. But yeah, that's what we'll have coming up later this offseason when we get closer to the draft with Mark. And in the meantime, we'll be back early next week, maybe probably Monday. Well, I'll try to do a Monday show. Maybe give you some of my thoughts on some of the offensive line workouts, you know, looking at that smooth footwork and whatnot that some of these guys may display today on Friday, as you guys may or may not be listening to it as well. Get some other thoughts. We'll get some other people that were on hand in Indianapolis on the show next week to give their thoughts on that. And then right after that, free agency is going to be right around the corner after that point. So the following week, and then we'll start talking a little bit more in depth in free agency. Also may give my takes on some of the sound bites from Thomas Dimitroff, as well as Dan Quinn in their combine press conferences. And we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, any sort of rumors and reports coming out of the combine as well, including, you know, some of this stuff talking about, you know, Don Terry Poe and Kamal Ishmael and Taylor Gabriel possibly not being in the Falcons' plans moving forward. So those are things to look forward to on Monday as well as next week with our illustrious guests. And in the meantime, if you have any comments, questions, compliments, suggestions, anything like that, any sort of feedback that you want to give me, positive or negative, I'm open to all of that for the most part. But if you want to give me that feedback, of course, you can do so on Twitter. I am at FalcFans. If it is podcast related, just let me know in that tweet. But the easiest way for your podcast related tweets, just send it over to the show's Twitter handle. That's Locked On Falcons. Locked On Falcons is also the Facebook page. Give us a like while you're there if you prefer that social media platform. LockedOnFalcons@mail.com is the email address. If you spurn all social media and you just want to, you know, send an email. I've gotten a lot over the last couple of weeks. I know I've been promising these leftover mailbags like 2 weeks ago. Haven't posted them yet. I apologize for that. I will definitely work on that this weekend. I took time off, so I don't really have any excuse to procrastinate anymore with that, with work being hectic the last week during the days and whatnot. But yeah, LockedOnFalcons.com is where those leftover mailbags as well. You can leave a comment there. It's another way of getting feedback. That's where the podcast is posted daily, as well as on FalcFans.com as well. You can leave a comment as well there. So, guys, that's it. We'll wrap this thing up here. And I hope you guys stay locked on. I hope you guys enjoy the combine. Don't fall in love with that guy that runs a 4.36. I know everybody's going to fall in love with somebody. Oh, did you see that 40 that this guy ran? I think the Falcons should take him. You know, yeah, we know. You don't need to get those takes out there quite yet. We can wait. We got time, all right? So you guys stay locked on. I'll be back probably on Monday and with more Falcons talk, more draft stuff, more combine stuff. So stay locked on, and I'll see you there.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.